The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Lovely. All right. So welcome back to the digital world that happens every single Friday from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. right here on Freedom 106.5. So today's featured conversation takes us deep into the future of education in the Caribbean. With exams around the corner and pressure mounting for students, teachers, and parents alike, one thing is becoming clearer than ever. We're going to need smarter tools, sharper insights, and more personalized learning paths to truly support student success. And that's exactly where LIDEFECT, I hope I did not butcher that, Academy comes in. This is a bold and forward-thinking edtech company, and it's using data to transform the way students prepare for exams, and more importantly, how they understand themselves as learners. So joining us in the studio today are two minds that are driving this revolution. First, we have Mr. Roger St. Hilaire, the director of LIDEFECT Academy, a forward-thinking educator with an impressive background in IT consulting and instructional design. He also serves as a course developer and instructor with Learning Tree International, one of the global leaders in IT and management training. Roger brings a systems thinking approach to education and is passionate about aligning technology with student success. And alongside him, we have Mr. Shiva Ram Singh, who is the CEO and founder of LIDEFECT Academy. And Shiva is leading the charge in using personalized learning, performance dashboards, and AI-powered career guidance to give Caribbean students an edge. His vision, to make every student's academic journey clearer, smarter, and more purpose-driven. So in today's conversation, we're going to be exploring how data-driven learning is helping students to identify their strengths, tackle their weaknesses, boost exam confidence, and even guide their career choices. We'll also look at the role of parents and teachers in this ecosystem and ask some questions about what the next 5 years of education could look like if we get this right. So if you're a parent, a teacher, or a student, this entire interview is for you. Roger, Shiva, welcome to the digital world. How are you gentlemen doing today?
Fine, it's a wonderful you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you again for having us.
Anytime. And I mean, listen, we started off the program talking about, you know, we have a new administration that's in town. There's a lot of, you know, new ideas that are surfacing as to how we can shape Trinidad and Tobago moving forward. And I think this conversation today with what you guys are doing, I think obviously has to be a cornerstone of that, because every other day we hear about the education system isn't where we need to be. So if we can improve that in any which way, shape, or form, that is absolutely worthwhile. So before we go, before we start, you know, just tell us a little bit more about the Academy and how it started, why it started, you know, where did the big idea come from? Give us more about, you know, just how it started.
Oh boy. Well, LIDEFECT Academy has taken several iterations, but actually in the last incarnation of this government, Roger, myself, and some of our like-minded individuals, we actually entered the idea to innovation competition with a concept similar to this, in that we wanted to bring personalized learning to the fore. And I mean, since then we have, you know, refined the idea several times, and in a few years ago we decided to incorporate LIDEFECT Academy to really utilize data analytics and AI to bring a more personalized experience to students and really help them to understand who they are, what they're capable of, and where their future lies.
Okay. That's a big one. Roger, did you want to add anything to that?
Well, just from our own experiences growing up, right? And this is why we did this. We've had our own challenges in terms of learning. Both of us are dyslexic a bit. So that creates some struggles in classrooms, and just teachers being able to address that. And, you know, we came together, you know, quite interestingly in a training session, actually. It was weird.
I literally had to pay Roger to get to know him. Not just do that.
You know, but, you know, the thing is, he struck me, because students will always say, oh, we have this idea, and it's like, oh, we want to do this. It's kind of like, it's usually some kind of half-baked stuff that yeah. you know, and they kind of run a non-money idea behind it. And that wasn't Shiva. Shiva was solid in terms of what he wanted to do and how he wanted to change society. I actually didn't start with the education piece. The education piece is what took off after. It started with an idea around risk. And that yeah. kind of blossomed into the education piece in that we looked at the students as a risk factor. What are the risks around the students, right? And because, you know, we synergized on that, and he was like, yeah, because, you know, children struggling and, you know, parents don't have the tools, the teachers don't have tools either that really allows them to give a 360 review of the kid.
Right.
And now the technology has caught up to that, right? Well, caught up with the ideas that we've had for a while, because this has been going on back and forth for a while, a few of us. And we, you know, so this iteration is actually active working iteration, right, of the idea of the student and what are the risks around the student that prevents the student from really maximizing their potential. And if you look at the name is I'd effect. I would affect the environment, right? And that is really, you know, that's all Shiva's idea there. And we just, you know, we smiled and we like, okay, this is stuff. This we can do.
I love the fact that you said that the technology finally caught up with the ideas, because you know what? I had an epiphany a couple of years ago just about my own trajectory. And one of the things that I thought to myself was, growing up, it was very hard for me to think about what I wanted to do, because I wasn't interested in almost anything I was learning in school. And it wasn't until I got to maybe about early 30s where just technology and smartphone technology took off. Things that I'm doing right now on the digital business side, a lot of these things did not exist 10, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. So now I know what I want to do because it just got invented within the past couple of years.
Right? Yeah.
So yeah. I know exactly what you mean when you say the technology caught up with the idea and now you know how to go about building. And I think, again, that just, it's just what makes the today's day and age just so interesting, because it doesn't matter what age you are anymore, whether you're young, whether you're old, like you really can create something and make a big impact. But going back into the academy now, you know, what gaps in the education system were you seeing that led you to adopt a data-driven approach? Because as you know, Caribbean-wide, when it comes to data, we run from it, right?
Yeah, so, that's true.
That's a real challenge.
So
go ahead.
I mean, I think I could take this one. So pretty much the traditional learning environment, I mean, that we grew up with, you know, teacher writes on a blackboard, or in this case, these days, you know, they write with markers on a whiteboard, same methodology, you know, student takes notes from a teacher who would either, you know, verbally stated, or they will get some sort of handout along with homework. And we saw those issues as something that was continuing from our time. And that was, my gosh, it sounds so long ago. I mean, just 20 years ago. it sounds so long ago, right? But I mean, it was literally just at the beginning of the millennium. And, you know, we have a thing for numbers. And we thought, why not disaggregate each part of the learning process from content, delivery, all the way to assessment, to really help a student and teacher to understand how these data points could be correlated? So let me give you an example. So data-driven learning is really the use of real-time data on, you know, how students perform from delivery of content all the way to assessment. And, you know, it could be something as simple as, you know, how they perform an assessment, a quiz, or even utilizing attendance data to correlate, you know, whether absenteeism is, you know, really forcing a student to underperform given that they are missing classes. Now, what this data allows, you know, once it's accurately mined and interpreted in the correct way, it allows a teacher and also administrators and even parents to really personalize feedback, one, and personalize interventions to maximize, you know, how well a student does, or the technical term, you know, student outcomes, right? So that way, student instruction could be more personalized, meaning teaching could be more personalized, and that feedback, you know, that students would get via traditional report books could be minutized or miniized or whatever you want to call it into real-time feedback after even midterm assessments or even homework of that sort. And that way, instruction could be personalized. So it's actually really, let's say, you know, the Google Maps of education, data-driven learning, right? So you'll have, you know, every turn you'll have, you know, a data point, you know, being interpreted and feedback being given in real time. Whereas, you know, if you use a traditional map, you'll have to unfold it. You know, if you use a report card in that way or report book in that way, you know, you'll unfold it once a term and be like, okay, this is how well my child is doing. They're talking too much in class, so this is why they're not doing well. And that's it. On to the next term. So the thing is, if we utilize a data-driven approach to education, you know, teachers could tweak tomorrow's lesson with today's number or yesterday's numbers. I mean, it's not, you know, just a once a term kind of autopsy, you know, whereas, you know, you come to a school and, okay, you know, you have a parent-teachers meeting, and then 2 weeks later, you forget how well they're doing and why, you know, they're not doing so well. So data-driven learning is so important, and this is why we're so deeply passionate at IFACT Academy with it, because it will allow for tighter feedback loops. And all this last-minute cramming, it will allow students to really understand where they're at. I mean, that is so important. I mean, personalizing study is, oh gosh, I can't tell you how much I wish for this, you know, even from my time. And it would stop, you know,
I think we all
significantly less cramming and panicking, you know, that happens during even traditional exam time, CSEC, CAPE, university exams. It still goes on. So this is a very important, I would say, initiative for us. And we are deeply passionate about it. I mean, Roger, I mean, he and I could sit down and talk about this all day. But I think really we need to bring this to the fore as soon as possible.
No, absolutely. Roger, one of the things that Shiva just said was, you know, when we have this data, getting people to... Well, interpretation of the data is a major, major thing, right?
Yeah.
And even in my space, when we're doing marketing and we're doing digital, when we're doing data research, I read the data and I see something, and that exact same data I'm going to give to somebody else, and either they don't see it or I need to sit down and systematically walk them through what we're looking at, right?
Yeah.
With all this data that you guys are collecting, how are you going about now coaching the teachers and coaching the parents to now look at this data from a perspective where you're taking a step back and you now can be a bit more hands-on with the learning path? Because again, the people that work with data, we see the story that the data is painting. Other people see that exact same data and it's lost on them. And because it's lost on them, they don't value the data in front of them.
Right.
So how are you guys going about addressing that?
So the academy itself is had its first run in terms of students and so on just last year, right? That coming down to the end of last year. And we've been infusing the analytics and the feedback loop with the students and the parents, right? So practically, that's what we're doing. We're setting up our dashboards now from the initial run. We're doing that now, and we'll be able to then have that ready for the next run of the academy, which is starting in June, right? So you want to encourage people to, you know, check out the site and, you know, sign up your kids, right? You're going to get better analytics, and we do actually have straight feedback. We have somebody's dedicated to that. She checks in with the teachers, checks in with the students, checks in with the parents, and then, you know, pulls the data together. Now, the parents would be in June, they'd actually be able to see that data online, what's going on with their kid, because as they log on to our system, they would all, the student logs onto the system, the parent would also need to be able to log on and see, well, how is my child doing, right? And we have a number of analytics, and we've been kind of testing them as we come along to, you know, tweak them and being able to have the conversation. And the key thing is being able to have the conversation. As you said, the analytics is there. They see the data, but they wouldn't know what to do with it. And that's where we have our specialists in place to be able to do that and, you know, bridge that gap. So we provide the data on one side, but we also provide understanding of the data on the other side, you know, and this, you know, that feedback loop, we're doing live feedback and tweaking as we go along. So it's going to get better again on the next tranche that comes out, which should be in September. We're going to do another run again, right? And then, you know, going forward like that. So it'd be really good, you know, the more students we have on board, they would get the benefits of the early run. They would get the benefits of being part of something really big. That's going to shift how education is delivered.
Yeah, no, that's critical. And again, I love how you guys are bridging that gap, because I think, like I said, anybody that works with data in whatever capacity, that's always the biggest challenge is when you now, okay, we've created the dashboards, we've created the reports, you have gold, you can go forth and prosper. And people look at that data and they're like, exactly. I don't know what I'm looking at. what am I going to do with this, right?
So, as Roger was saying, you know, our dashboards will be, given that, you know, the maturity for digital, you know, learning interpretation or results of digital learning initiatives is still in its nascent phase. We have decided, you know, to keep it simple. Our graphs will simply outline, let's say, for one assessment, if you're doing math, and it'll show where exactly you're strong, you're not so strong, give a text-related interpretation of what that data means, right. And pretty much it will offer other key metrics, such as, you know, time taken versus a benchmark, how confident you felt during those exams that you've been taking, what mood you were in. So it's a lot of correlated data that students can look forward to in terms of that interpretation. And some people, you know, who are listening may ask, you know, why would mood correlate, you know, to, you know, how well my students are? So let's say, for example, if you plant a buff on your child, you know, just before the exam. I mean, you know, we've all experienced that at some point, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you plant a good buff, I mean, that couldn't affect, you know, their confidence going into the exam. So then apparently, to say, okay, this actually happened right before the exam, and they indicated their mood was, let's say, on a scale of 1 to 5, you know, with 1 being the worst, it was 1, you know, versus, you know, it's not in keeping with their normal personality. So if they do bad in the exam, we could then present that data and show that correlation. So it's, yes, a step up, but naturally, when we're in this sort of environment where, you know, chalk and talk lessons, I guess is probably the right term, are currently being delivered. We need to take it into an iterative manner, as Roger was saying, where we move from data analytics, having, you know, just simple text interpretation, to really where a chatbot, you know, would be utilized to even deliver lessons, or even an AI agent of a teacher would be able to answer questions outside of office hours. So it's all going to be iterative and done in such a way that the market, you know, wouldn't be too shell-shocked to know what exactly they see.
Yeah.
No, that's, and again, and that's very good. And you see, even the integration of that, of the AI chatbots to help with the creation of learning paths, I think would be a very good addition. One of the things that, if I'm teaching at a school, or if I'm doing a career day, one of the things that I'm showing people how to do is go on LinkedIn and find somebody that's in the exact job that you want, right? Mm-hmm. Screenshot that exact person's entire LinkedIn profile, their roles in that space, in the company they're working for. And you can now throw that into ChatGPT and say, to analyze this person's role, this is a role that I want to be at within the next 5 years. Create an entire learning plan. Tell me what degrees I need. Tell me what short courses I need. Tell me what volunteer work I should do to gain practical experience. And the lesson plans that ChatGPT gets, because it's pulling from your ideal role and what somebody who has found success in that role, what that looks like. Again, absolutely insane, game changer. So now if you put it into the local context, where now it's feeding into what's available locally.
I'm glad you're saying that, because we actually do have a prototype of an AI agent, which focuses on careers in AI and software development. So we would have debuted it a few months ago. And so we have gotten some feedback, you know, concerning that particular prototype. And we have a bunch of benchmarks that we plan to incorporate into a closed loop, closed data loop, naturally. So it will be once our dashboard, you know, identify consistent areas of strength. Let's say, for example, if a student is, let's say, something similar that everyone can relate to. If a student is good in programming, say, for example, right? And, you know, they do well in that area of the CSEC syllabus and CAPE syllabus, you know, for information technology. We can then say, okay, well, you can, based on your so-called career goals, we recommend these particular careers for you. And to get to these particular points, okay, these are the local programs or international programs, which you can pursue to get to that entry-level position in terms of your desired career. Now, a step further in that skill. So let me give you an example. So one case I found, you know, really interesting was a new career called a nostalgist, right? So a nostalgist basically is someone who would create experiences for older folks to relive their past experiences. Yeah, it's really interesting. Now, when I looked, I was wondering myself, what on earth, you know, what a nostalgist do in terms of, you know, how would they acquire their skill set? Marketing, virtual reality, programming, animation, and psychology. When I saw that, I was like, I wondered to myself, well, good grief. I mean, it's going to be a mix and match of skills in not too distant future. And nostalgia is actually being implemented in some European countries as a lived experience, you know, for persons in elderly homes, etc. So you can imagine a programmer right now is, you know, really their skill set, you know, would need to change because, you know, they would need to utilize, you know, let's say, for example, animation skills, so on, you know, UI, UX, whether it be front end or back end, they would need, may need to learn how to interpret data, you know, if they never really specialize in data analytics. Right. And not to mention, they would need to learn how to work with AI. And so it's not to say, you know, you could simply be a back end developer anymore and just rest on your laurels. I mean, things are evolving so quickly. And even now, you know, with programmers, they may need to have an in-depth knowledge of cybersecurity because coding, you know, results in, you know, having a lot of, you know, pen testing and that sort of thing. Yeah. So it's really interesting how careers have been evolved. But to back to the previous point, our chatbots, you know, will match students, you know, based on their areas of strengths, and we will match them directly to either career paths they want to get into or ones which we recommend. And that way we can then recommend personalize as you know, the lingo goes. You personalize it, they would want it more. So we can then, you know, recommend them to certificates, diplomas, degrees that they need, that they can pursue. And all of it, you know, based on leading practice. So all of this is going to be done sooner rather than later. So I would sincerely hope that the Ministry of Education gets on this bandwagon sooner rather than later, because I can't tell you how it aches my heart, you know, when I hear some of my teacher friends say, you know, they still have so many issues, you know, with uploading marks into, you know, into some random LMS system and, you know, no aggregation of data to say, okay, well, okay, these are the backgrounds that some of our lower performing students come from. And it really aches my heart to see that we have such a wealth of data locally, but it's not interpreted and utilized in the right way to design personalized interventions for students to maximize their potential, I would say.
Yeah, and that's where exactly where we are sitting, because that's one of our pain points that we looked at. Because, you know, you're seeing students that have, you know, you go in different areas in Trinidad and Tobago and you'd meet kids and so on doing different things. And you realize, oh, that kid has some good potential. But then you look at where he's going to school or where she's going to school and the access that they have. And even the teachers, because I have, you know, our teacher friends, do say, well, we can't give them what they need, or we need more money in this area, or we need to understand this, right? So they're limited on the tool set that they can use. And our platform is leaning into that. As you said, the chatbot got its first run a few months ago. And we have feedback from that. And even at that first run, we had narrowed what it could respond to and what it could deal with. And as, you know, Shiva's laid out there, we're moving to the space where we're using not just, oh, this is what I want to do, as you said, you know, and you'd show students that this is what you want to do, look at that person and copy that. What it's doing is actually looking at, well, what are you learning? What are your strengths? And how are you performing in class along this whole spectrum? We're using that spectrum now to then determine how you can move forward. So using the data that you're actually generating and not just, oh, I want that career. And that now even ties you tighter to, you know, in terms of the responses, tighter to what the student actually needs to go in that career. And even if that career would be the right career for them, right? I'll give an example, but this is more from a person analyzing what's going on. And that's where we're going to get. So I used to be in pharmacy. I did pharmacy very, very early in my career. And I was, I was tapped to take over the pharmacy at a particular hospital back then at home.
Yeah.
And, you know, your boy was all there. And then they said they were going to computerize the hospital. And the head pharmacist cut me loose. She sat down. She was a very patient woman. She watched the whole thing happen. And then she came to me after. She said, you know, you're probably not going to use your pharmacy degree. I said, well, why? You will go and set up a whole chain of pharmacies and never use the pharmacy degree. I was like, and what's wrong with that? She said, well, we want somebody here. Now, I was relieved of that job, right? But that set me to set up my very first organization, because she recognized that I had that knack for data, had that knack for solving problems using technology. And that's been where my career has then led to, right? So rather than going, because, you know, pharmacy, you know, it's opportunity and similar, like as you shared, you know, you're wondering what to do with your life, kind of an idea. And there was the opportunity. And I like medical stuff anyway. So you're like, oh, let's do that. Right.
Yeah.
But then with those, and that was, you know, she's been a really good friend to me over the years, even though, you know, we left that particular institution. But that's part of what we're trying to give kids now with the information that they're generating just from them in class. We're able to see where, you know, this is actually, you may want to do this, but look
your
at what
strengths are over here.
Right. Your strengths are over here. And, you know, and then we have the additions of the behavioral with the, what mood you're in and all that kind of stuff. And we'll be adding that in other spaces throughout. So with all that data correlated, we really get a sense of you actually enjoy doing this. And you're actually happier when you're doing these bunch of things. Therefore, your career path is more likely here. You'll do that. It may make money, but you'll be frustrated for most of your life, right? But you do this, you'll be happy and you'll also make some money, right? So, I mean, that, and again, it's really just dealing with the human, the human being that is the student.
That is the right approach, because even when I would do an exercise with someone on, okay, let's go and look at somebody who is in a role that you want and create a learning path. The second part of that same exercise is, let's upload a resume so it learns about us, then have ChatGPT ask questions, interview style, to learn about us. And then when we're looking at these jobs, ask ChatGPT, I want you to rate, am I a fit for this particular role? So the fact that you guys are calling that data based on their actual skill sets and what they're doing, there's a data could be implemented and used and strategized. So if I'm a parent that likes data, you're combing through this six ways from Sunday because it tells a story, and there's just so many things that you can do with that information to tighten up that learning path and get into the right space that you want. We need that. We need that, because what's happening now too, and Shiva, you're dead on, right? When you said that learning is no longer linear, we are learning skill sets from all over the place. You know, when I look at the hats that I wear, I'm stringing together multiple things to do what I'm doing. But I think one of the biggest challenges, we often hear jack of all trades, master of none. So when people hear that, okay, you're skilled with this, you're skilled over here, that's typically where people's thinking stops. And I think what has to happen now is, with the learning not being linear, you have to be cognizant of all the skills that you're picking up, but then you have to have the gift of sight to then see what skills are relational that you can kind of pull together to now create something for you to execute on and move forward. And a lot of people don't have that kind of foresight. So I think with the data that you guys are collecting and you're seeing those strengths, that closes that gap to let people see exactly where they are and what they would be good at and what lights them up. Now, again, that's going to be huge moving forward. Now, what I want to know is, how do you guys go about defining success? What does success look like when you're talking about, you know, what the students are achieving?
So part of our methodology, we are starting simple as we have indicated. So part of our methodology that we want to implement is to give students a sight of where their goal is at. So we will present a visual representation to start with of where students' goals are, and naturally that will be done in conjunction with their parents and teachers. Now, in terms of where success lies for us, it's ever-changing, because 6 months ago, it was merely starting the academy. Now, for us, success means, you know, success for our students. And success for us would be our students not only improving in their standard of academic performance, but exceeding, well, achieving first and then exceeding their academic goals. Now, having said that, given where we want to go as an organization and utilize artificial intelligence to really personalize learning to its core, I would have to say that students unleashing their potential, meaning understanding who they are, what they need to do in order to get there, would be the ultimate definition of success for iEffect Academy.
And that's a big one. That's a big one, because I think I get a lot of parents that reach out, and direction is one of the biggest problems that keeps on coming up. What to do? And when you're talking to guidance counselors, you're not getting the direction that would allow you to prepare for tomorrow. A lot of this stuff is still, well, you know, there's the air guard, there's the prisons. A lot of it's still traditional things that, you know, we don't necessarily need, especially at a time as pivotal as today, when the world is moving at the speed of a tweet. Donald Trump could sit down and have some lemonade and have a thought, send a tweet that sends ripples throughout the entire world, and everything has changed. And right now, we're not built to keep up with that speed.
Karen, so let me give you some data that I would have read not too long ago when we were actually in the planning stages of iEffect Academy. So there's currently an IDB report done, I think it's their Caribbean quarterly, which showed a major issue with our skilled labor pool in the country, in that 51.7% of the labor force consisted of persons with only a secondary school education and or training, right? 22.5%, a further 22.5% of the employable labor force only attained a primary school education or passed no subjects at secondary school. And only 20, what's even more worrying statistic, 23.8% attain a university level education. Now, university level would mean certificate, diploma, or even a university degree. Mm-hmm. That is a worrying statistic, to be honest. Wow. And when I looked at it, I had to scratch my eyes, you know, more than once, right? Because if we map that, that is hundreds of thousands of persons who may not have, even though we went through this whole process with Gates, etc.
Yeah.
The current workforce, you could say, according to the central bank, is about 600,000 people. You could say, I think it's about 594. Yeah. If we disaggregate the data in that regard, over 50%, that's nearly 500,000 people. That's nearly 500,000 people with a primary school education of little to no passes at secondary school level. So now more than ever, we need personalized learning paths to really upskill them to where we need to be. Or if we don't succeed, we'll have to use AI, you know, to fulfill, you know, we'd have to use agents and robots, you know, to fill these gaps, which is another expense altogether. But the worst case scenario is that, you know, we'll lose investments.
Yeah. So the replay factor of that is huge. But so let's tear back on something that you were saying, Karen. The traditional thinking of, well, you go and you do this and you go to National Guard, or you go to this particular area, go to that particular area. What we're attempting to do is to help them with that diversification and with the access to the skills. Because as the bot was designed and it's continuing to evolve in that space, what are your strengths? What are the skill sets? What can you do? We have uploaded a number of things, a number of frameworks that look across multiple skill sets. And we start with digital space, of course. We start with that first, right? And those, it's now mapping to those skill sets, right? Yeah. So what you can do with a certain skill set. So it's not like staying with the traditional structure. It's like, oh, you have these bunch of skills, this is what you can do. You have these bunch of skills, that is what you can do.
Yeah.
And while the understanding of the education level, as Shiva was explaining there, the education levels of you know, university degrees, certificates, etc., secondary education, and really is literacy that you're looking at. So you're looking at, well, what's the literacy that people have, and then taking that to be able to then guide them into a path, ultimately to make them productive. So it's not so much to give them, well, a university typical or, you know, education, but to really make them productive in society. Are they at the level? And that's where the university measurement generally is. University measurement generally says that you could stay in class for a period of time. You have a certain level of learning. You can write at a certain level. You can understand at a certain level, right? Yeah. And we want to move them through those so that they can then be productive, because ultimately, if you could understand more and if you could articulate better, you definitely will become more productive, right? Yeah.
I guess the flip side of that is that, in keeping what I was speaking about before, in terms of, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say a brain drain, but a skilled labor issue for the country. Mm-hmm. I guess now the real issue is to determine what industries we need to go into, you know, to truly diversify the economy.
Right.
And having said that, reverse engineer the skills that we'll need, and therefore go back into the secondary school system, identify where we need to, you know, change subjects or amend syllabi to really, you know, meet the demand, you know, for skills within the areas that we need to diversify or wish to diversify into.
Yeah.
So let me tell you how we're so aligned, right? So before you came on the program, I was talking about my wish list for some of the things I would love the new administration to take a look at, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the second point on my list was an aggressive upskilling of persons over the age of 40. Because what is happening, right? a lot of businesses are not evolving because they're looking at their labor and their labor doesn't want to upskill, or maybe the company doesn't want to invest, or the persons don't want to upskill. So they're not evolving as a company, they're not evolving the processes, they're not evolving the people, they're not evolving the technology. And they're holding on to people whose skills or titles have been redundant for years.
Yeah.
And is holding back the company. But they also don't want to let them go because they don't want to run into any labor issues, right? So what has to happen? What has to happen? And I think Singapore, I'm sure you guys may or may not have seen this, but Singapore has launched a program called the Skill Up mm-hmm. Future Program. Mm-hmm. And it's geared at poor persons over the age of 40 who are working. But they're allowing people to, so the government has laid out, okay, we've analyzed where the country is going. We know what industries we want to build up. And because we know what industries we want to build up, we know what skills we need in those industries. So we have now curated a list of 7,000 courses for the nation to take, that the credits that we are giving you to now upskill, you can put towards this group, because this is what the country needs moving forward. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest part, now this is not on you, but this is something that I lecture in UE, and I keep on having this conversation at UE.
Policymakers.
Somebody has to start with, what is the national vision? Where are we going as a country? What do we want our citizens to strive for? And then start to reverse engineer, looking at every single sector in TNT. How are we going to modernize it? What skill sets do we need? And then start to reverse engineer from there, because the missing link in Trinidad, or not just Trinidad, but Caribbean wide, is the education and employment. I can come to any one of our universities and take a pretty good course. Mm-hmm. But after BSC I've gotten this degree,
BSc in
management. Yeah, right. But then when I finish a degree, a lot of these businesses haven't evolved for me to even take this skill set
and use it.
Mm-hmm. So there is a huge mismatch, and there needs to be greater collaboration with the direction of the country, analyzing what skill sets we actually need. And then now when we come to you and we say, all right, cool, we're looking for this person in agri-tech, and you can now say, hey, we have a list of 500 students who would be a good fit for people. That's the link that, and I'm saying this out loud because they listen, you know, whether they take it and reach out is a different thing.
We
have the conversations with the right people offline, but again, the implementation is the biggest challenge.
I think that's
the missing link.
Yes,
I think, you know, the energy sector and, you know, the financial sector are probably two instances where the industries have recognized that they need skills. And that's why, you know, specialized programs within UE have been designed. So ergo, the BSc in insurance and risk, or let's say, for example, BSc in banking and finance. So, I mean, they have recognized, and I think there's a master's in AI right now, I think, that was recently introduced. So there is some recognition of it, but the thing is, they need to go more granular in terms of skill measurement, in that whatever projects that they give to students, one. Two, the examinations, for heaven's sake, show student proficiency per course. That way you can match them better with jobs.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's...
Yeah.
The syllabus analytics is so simple, and they have some very competent people within the Department of Computer Science, like Dr. Phaedra Mohammed, specialist in learning analytics.
Yes.
One of my favorite people on the face of this earth. Hi, Phaedra, if she's listening. You know, they have such competent people in the Department of Computer Science, and mind boggles me, why haven't they implemented some of these things yet? If they give people certifiable skill profiles showing per course where they're strong, not so strong, they could better match students with jobs or projects that would give them the experience that they need to be better on the job. Because a lot of... So of a colleague of mine who I knew at Rotary International, Lara Quantrell-Thomas, she regularly preaches that. Laura regularly preaches that students that come out of UE are not of the caliber required. And that's an unfortunate thing because UE is a good institution, but it's simply a matter of skill measurement and introducing, like you said, you know, a match between what the industry needs or requires versus what is taught in a university, because soft skills is something which needs to be developed, you know, not only in life, but, you know, for the job as well. I mean, you need to know how to negotiate, you know, critical thinking and analysis of data, you know. Some of these things are not taught within the university setting until World of Work comes. And, you know, why aren't these things, you know, on the university syllabus? I mean, and given that AI is going to automate a lot of things, where we need to evolve is in our soft skills, not only technical. Some aspects of technical skills will always be required, but that will evolve as time goes along. Similarly, you know, people who are data analysts, now they need to become, you know, AI engineers. Or if you were a data engineer, now you need to become an AI engineer because data analysis is being done through large language models. So if you don't upskill yourself from being a data analyst, your job dead. In essence, I mean,
you gotta be able to use.
There's a consistent, like you have indicated, there needs to be a consistent collaboration between industry, government, policymakers, and the education system, which I am hoping. I can't say. I mean, we're gonna help, you know, plug the gap to a certain extent. Yes.
Yeah. Correct.
Through, you know, our technology and, you know, skills, skills measurement, etc. But we are at the secondary school level for now. Policymakers, you know, and the thing is, UTT, UE, we have university level institutions which have such skilled personnel. The question is, you know, why aren't we implemented a more integrated approach to really understanding what industries we want to go into, the skills that are required, and the education pathways which are needed, whether it be certificate, you know, micro learning, or micro certifications, rather, diplomas, or even degrees, or now they even have micro degrees, for that matter. Yeah, I think MIT, through Coursera and those places, you know, they offer that.
Yeah.
Why on God's green earth don't we tailor these programs to ourselves? We have such skilled personnel at the university level. I forgive my frustration, but...
I hear you screaming there. But there are some lights. There's some small lights in some places. My niece actually was sharing with me that one of her lecturers actually took them out in the field. And that would be part of the analytics too. Because if you're looking at proper analytics, you'd want to then prove ability to do said item, not just the theory, right? Mm-hmm. And she actually got, you know, good marks in the interview that she did for that particular skill set when she was able to pull out and show them, these are my results from stuff that I have done actually in the field. This is some of the stuff that we've done. And they were pleasantly surprised, right? That was there. So this is some of the stuff, again, back to getting down to the alignment between the existing work environment and the skill sets of the students, and bringing those together so that they can then leave with something that they can go with. And the data is what allows that to happen. One of the things for some of the institutions, an institution I train for, is that. That's why I train for them, because I'm actually a consultant. So we're not just bringing the, you know, you're not just bringing, well, okay, this is a theory, but this is what it works like in the real world. And that's where we're also bridging the gap, because we're looking at what's going on in the real world, and our AI agents and other pieces of the whole analytics. As we said earlier, we'd look at the student's operation, and from the student's operation, then match them to what is actually required for them to be able to excel and provide guidance in that space. You know, so the data is running pretty heavy through everything. Yes, go ahead.
You said a lot of good things there, right? And one of the things that came to mind as you were talking, Roger, I think we still struggle Caribbean wide with the idea that learning only happens inside of an institution, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, brick and mortar, right?
Mm-hmm.
I happen to lecture at Lockjack. I teach at University of South Florida. And there's another institution that I'll be lecturing at as well, another tertiary education. And the funniest thing happened in one of my interviews when I got brought on. I never applied for any of these jobs. These are roles that I was sought out, headhunted for and brought in, right? And in one of the interviews, right, they had asked, you know, what are your qualifications to teach or lecture on digital marketing? And I'm like, well, I actually dropped out of high school. I don't have my high school diploma. I could have went back to get my one credit to graduate. And then I learned that, well, my birthday's late in December. And if I just waited till I was 19, I wouldn't need the credit. I would just apply as a mature student and walk right into university and go forth and prosper, right? But I didn't graduate from my university because I hated a particular course. I say all that to say, everything that I've learned outside of traditional school. Yep. And Caribbean wide, we still struggle with the learning has to happen at that brick and mortar. We still haven't accepted that learning can happen in all these other ways. Yeah. And now when you have learned when you've done all the short courses, you've spent 1,000 hours on YouTube University, and you're now actually getting the practical knowledge. What we also haven't accepted that your practical portfolio, your body of work will outrank your resume. So that's how I'm lecturing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's because I have a body of work, and it's not the it's the body of work that you actually can do everything. That is something that I think we need to start to shift. But I want to ask you, how do we start to shift that? Because you're going to have a lot of data to work with, right?
Yeah.
And even when you have the recommendations to what you should go ahead and learn, I don't think you're going to limit it to just go to UE or go to Lockjack or go to, right?
It's going to be to that.
Yeah.
Right. So how do we go about shifting the mindsets of the population to start accepting that education can happen out of that brick and mortar? How do we start to get that in circulation?
Ooh, that will need to happen at all levels, because naturally traditional persons within the marketplace would resist. You know, similar to people who believe that you still need to come to physically to work to execute a job. Those are the kinds of mindsets that will still resist people being outside of the traditional setting to not only get schooling, but, you know, show that they have actually achieved something.
Yeah.
So ergo, it'll be educating stakeholders at all levels, parents, teachers, administrators, because I'm dead sure we're going to get resistance from administrators like, well, why are you going to do this? Because my colloquialism, but why are you going to do this? And there will always be resistance to change, but education with stakeholders at all levels, from the job market, come all the way down or up rather to policymakers. It will be naturally with any cultural change, there will be some resistance, but education and consultation is one of the strategies that we will utilize to bring about the change that we wish to see, for lack of a better term.
Yeah. And we have been actually utilizing it. I mean, he's saying we will. Right, but we have been utilizing it. So we have engaged with the Ministry of Education for certain bits of information, and to share with them, look, this is what we're doing, and this is how we could help you guys. So we engage with the Ministry of Education, so as policymakers, we engage with teachers, right, which are staffed through our system, and we engage with them with those same ideas. We engage with the parents for the students with those same ideas. So we're working on all fronts. At the same time, by infusing the message in everything that we're doing, that we're helping the student literally unleash themselves.
Well, one thing I'd like to add is one thing that we have realized is that the guidance counselors within each school, you know, whether they be for a group of schools or simply a singular school in some cases, have been, you know, quite a a good partner for us in terms of spreading what is required. I
imagine so. Yeah.
What is required, you know, for the future of careers. So ironically today, you know, some of our team members went to a school in Central to deliver such a message, you know, utilizing their own subject areas to show them how they can basically get the foundational knowledge within the school system to get into, you know, the top careers, you know, as outlined by the World Economic Forum between 2025 and 2030, because there's an entire document on the, you know, Future of Jobs report. Yeah, which I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, Future of Jobs
so
report,
we would have mapped it out and done a very simple presentation, but impactful presentation, I was told, because my team members, you know, would have just reported back that it went well. And that being said, you know, the guidance counselors told me something rather telling, that no provider which has, that they have approached in the past, has, you know, provided such personalized, well, research to them in terms of, okay, what is required, you know, going forward to chart their future, in other words, or what they would require to chart their future, in other words. So, I mean, we're happy to help them, naturally, because we would have done it for, I think, 3 schools so far, and many more to come.
See, and this is why I love this conversation. It's very aligned. The Future of Jobs report, that's something, and this is one of the reasons mm-hmm. why I got into media to begin with, able to share a lot mm-hmm. of this type of knowledge, right?
Yeah.
We did a breakdown of the Future of Jobs report and was breaking down the top new jobs that are coming in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
More importantly, what are the jobs that are going out, right? 92 million jobs.
Yeah.
92 million jobs are on the way out over the next 5-year period, and mm-hmm. there's supposed to be 192 jobs that are coming on board over this next 5-year period. For, and the funny thing is, right,
mm-hmm.
we had a show breaking down the Future of Jobs report. We had people call in and right. just weigh in.
Yeah.
So you, as you said, bank tellers, postal drivers, or postal office clerks. There was a bunch customer of different roles, customer yeah. service representatives. But the funny thing about it is, when we had that show, we had a lot of people call in, and the first thing they said was, nah, not in Trinidad. We bank tellers are not just going to leave in Trinidad. But that is where, and again, and this is why I say yeah. I love having these shows, because when you have these shows and people call in and you see where the mindset is of the population, yeah. I'll tell everybody, listen, even if it doesn't happen in the next 5 years,
it
the fact that
eventually.
Your
yeah.
job is there on that list means mm-hmm. that there's something already in the works
yeah.
to remove that job and make it redundant. Do you want to be yeah. the person where 5 years from now, you're like, oh, wow, I should have listened when they said it was on the way out?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
with the speed of change, and I also don't think that we're accustomed. I still think that we believe we're in the 90s, where change happens every couple of years.
Yeah, boy.
Haven't accepted. I, yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Especially if you're in the tech space, because mm-hmm. every one yeah. change along that value chain impacts how we go about delivering our business, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So mm-hmm. we haven't yeah. accepted that speed of change. But I have two more questions before we wrap up.
Yeah, okay. Sure.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to the speed of change in the education, with education, right? What do you think our government, or what would you like to see our government do in, or set up so that they have a finger on the pulse of education that would allow us to be adaptable for these times? Because I don't think we're keeping up with...
No, we need to have a group of subject matter experts, whether it be a think tank, and also possibly similar to what Ministry of Digital Transformation would have done recently, maybe have a code jam or even a competition where persons, you know, generate technologies, you know, in alignment to solving certain problems. I think mm-hmm. that is those are two ways in which we can get to where, or at least closer to where we need to be. Because one, that think tank, you know, could generate, you know, possibly a list of problems which need to be solved at least high priority and potential solutions. I mean, naturally, as governments have done in the past, those will be done within consultations, yes. Secondly, you know, that think tank, you know, could naturally run those set up competitions where those problems are solved, you know, via technological means. And naturally, I would also recommend that, you know, at least experienced software standards are given to, you know, those competitors, because naturally they would need to be utilized, or they would want it to be our standard, which could be implemented in not too distant future. Because the thing is, right now, even if, you know, let's say requests for proposals go out for learning management systems, or even, you know, e-learning systems, which could, you know, generate, you know, skill reports, or even do adaptive learning, for example, you know, learning adapted to, you know, visual, audio, reading, or kinesthetic.
Yeah.
That'll take some time for teachers to upskill, one, because, you know, we had that issue during COVID where teachers did not want to generate digital content because it wasn't in their contracts. One, and two, they weren't being paid for it. Secondly, the rate of change, which we might want to see, may not happen, depending on how much resistance we get from the education system itself. Not necessarily, because naturally, you know, with everything that comes with a hint of politics in it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain things which could be implemented in the not too distant future, which could make so much of a difference. Let's say, for example, have a set of generated content which all schools could use. This is not rocket science. It could be done. Teachers could, you know, take that content, you know, mix and match and collaborate, and it doesn't need to be, you know, you taking lessons by this teacher because, you know, you could only get these notes by this teacher. I mean, it's a fixed syllabus. It's, again, you know, CSEC and CAPE, and yes, it's a money game. I have no issue, you know, with people wanting to eat their cake as well. But this is the future of our nation that we are dealing with. And there comes a time when, you know, narrow-minded points of view that needs to be superseded, and the greater good needs to be done. So, you know, these kind of hackathons and stuff, you know, could be done within the short term, you know, to get workable solutions for implementation. And also, naturally, then there also needs to be the will from up above in terms of the government to implement those policy directions, you know, to ensure that, you know, e-learning is implemented in not too distant future, and you know, the relevant data protections, you know, for cybersecurity, etc., is implemented.
Yeah.
Roger, so, go ahead. Add your point, because I want to ask you one more question after this. Go ahead, Roger.
Okay, cool. So in short, I mean, what we're looking at is that we need proper community engagement in a structured framework that meets international standards, right? We've been pushing for a number of things in that place, which is why we had the conversation with the Ministry of Education. As you can see from what she has said, we're structuring internally for that. And every standard that what we did, so in the initial build, what we did is go through all the standards worldwide that are required for education so that we can match those. And if we match everything, then we would deliver the highest level that is required. And it would not be, oh, this is a Caribbean thing. It'd be, we could take anybody in the Caribbean, put them anywhere on the planet, and they will deliver. Right? And that has been our drive from the end there, to structure it so that when they pass through our system, they will be able to perform anywhere on the planet, and our standards will meet the standards of the planet, not just, and in that we engage to help the education systems come up to that, which is why we engage with the Ministry of Education. But yeah, that's it in a nutshell there. Yeah, go ahead.
My final question for you, gentlemen, and Roger, you could start off, is do you feel like the nation is at a pivotal point when it comes to our education and how you feel like we're at a make or break point in our journey right now with getting education right?
But let me put it this way. It's not a point, it's a plateau, because that point was there for years ago. Right? It was there a while. So and we're still not getting off of it. And it's really important now, again, with all the world shifts that have taken place, this is our differentiator. This is where we can shift the game and move things forward. We've lost a number of things over the years because our educational system has been behind. I mean, and we see it because our students leave here and go elsewhere and excel because they have access, right? So it's not that the population doesn't have the brain power. The population has the brain power, right? It's taking the population now and being able to harness that brain power. And that's where the education system is. That's what it needs to be doing, right? And we will continue to engage. We will continue to do our work in terms of providing the platform, providing the tools and so on for both teachers, students, and for the whole group, teachers, students, parents, to be able to maximize and unleash the students' potential. But there's a legislative structure that needs to support that. There's a governance structure that needs to support that on a nationwide level. And that structure has been failing Trinidad and Tobago for a long while, right? So yes, we definitely at a pivotal point. And we will agitate from where we can and provide those inroads where we can, but we will do the work that we can do, and we're going to be busy doing that, regardless of who want to do whatever and whichever government come and go, we will be delivering.
Beautiful. Shiva, I'll leave the final words with you.
I think, we definitely need to utilize the inherent potential within our student populace in a better way. Because right now, we have a number of issues which only the inherent skill set of our people can get us out of. Mm-hmm. And the future of our nation is at a crossroads. For our part at Heidi Fact Academy, we will continue, like Roger said, to push the envelope, and no matter come high, come low, we will, unleash the potential of our students in the best way possible, utilizing the tools which they deserve to have.
Yes.
Not because, we simply want to show off, but they deserve to know who they are, what they are capable of, and where they need to go, or where they want to go. That is only fair in one's life. Yeah.
Where can we get more information on the Academy?
You can go to academy.ideffect.com, academy.ideffect.com, and you can see a full list of what we do, our upcoming dashboards, for July, August vacation classes, what exactly they will do, and how they will not only create that ideffect impact for you and your children.
Gentlemen, Roger, Shiva, it was a pleasure. Extremely insightful conversation. And again, I love the fact that you both have stressed that we really are at a pivotal point. We really do have to get this right. And again, TNT, we are at a point right now where things are changing so fast.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.